שלום ליהודים, שלום לבני נוער, שלום לגויים. It's the evening of the second day, כ"ג באלול, פרשת ניצבים, תשע"ו, the evening of the first day, Sunday, 25 September 2016, webcasting from Israel, waiting for Obama's final aggression against the state of Al-Yahud. So the principal headline today in J-Post hard copy was, quote, PM hopes Obama won't push new peace initiative, close quote. Leastwise, that is what he said on Channel 2 last night, following his days in New York last week, speaking at the UN on Thursday and meeting with the Muslim secret agent in the White House in New York Hotel. He also met with the American traitor who betrayed his country to the Viet Cong on Friday, Secretary Kerry, before he arrived in New York, and he addressed the nations that fund the Palestinian Authority, Kerry did, close quote. That's how the Times of Israel site put it, which I found most peculiar and revealing. The nations that fund the Palestinian Authority, which makes yours truly wonder why there are nations still funding the Palestinian Authority after almost a quarter century. At what point will the PA become self-sustaining? After all, this is the ancient Palestinian people. Surely they have a steady state way of life. Imagine what world anti-Jewry dreams about, Judea and Samaria, as it was before June 1967. No Jews. And one wonders, what kind of an economy would they have in that state that they have allegedly been dreaming about from time immemorial? What would they produce? What would they manufacture? Right now, some 120,000 of them work in Israel. Imagine when they get their freedom from us racist, fascist, imperialist aggressors, what life would be like for them. And of course, without any further assistance from the nations that fund the PA. And one wonders just who are these nations, and how many of them are officially Arab, officially Muslim? I'll bet a major percentage are the post-Christian Western states, including maybe Japan and South Korea as protection money. Certainly for the post-Christian Western states. It's this generations of continuing a couple thousand years of European Jew hatred. One heartwarming note today was a headline telling us that Rudy Giuliani thinks is the United States should terminate the quest for the two-state solution altogether. And another headline said a longtime Trump friend, David Friedman, in New York, said Trump would back annexation, and that's not the first time he said this. In other words, these are healthy signs that the imagined two-state solution is now entering its decrepitude, perhaps evidenced by the new ability of respectable people, not religious fanatics like us settlers, to even suggest putting to sleep, like an old dog, the two-state solution lunacy. It's forgotten, I think, that the two-state solution is shorthand for the Oslo abomination, so pleasing in conception 23 years ago to the famous Dr. Balin and his mentor Uncle Shimon, and the likes of the late communist of Jewish extraction, Dr. Ron Pundek, and other really second- and third-rate thinkers like them, all of them on the left. The Oslo fantasy was that Arafat and his secular nationalist freedom fighters would take over and shield Israel from their rivals, the Hamas religionists. Rabin and Peres were raised in the socialist Zionist camp to despise religion, and in their minds, the Arabs here were divided into two camps, the good, secular, nationalist Jew killers who were just like the secular Zionists and wanting a state of their own. And Oslo was meant to deal with them because Hamas was out of the question for their religiosity. This was the prescription of the left's deep thinkers like Balin and Tzipi Livni, both of whom I heard independently one of the other declare that if we define the conflict as religious, there's no solution, so let's define it in political national terms. Indeed, in their post-religious Israel, when the police find a dead Jew, God forbid, they must determine, the news media tell us, whether it was a criminal or nationalist crime. In this Israel, you see, no Jew is ever murdered by an anti-Semite, a lunatic Jew hater. In the pseudoscientific 19th century sense of an anti-Semitic hater, or a medieval religious hater common to Christendom and Islam. Anti-Semitism for Israelis like these is always something abroad, but not known here at all. Yeah, the Oslo architects were truly second- and third-rate thinkers for their almost childish belief that it was possible to define the conflict as they want it to be, and never mind what the other side wants or is capable of. It never occurred to these post-religious Zionists that while they enjoyed calling themselves Palestinians in the first half of the 20th century, the Arabs and Muslims still looked upon them as Jews. Their fantasy was, we'll stop thinking and acting like Jews, and the Goyim will stop hating and murdering us all the time. It never occurred to them that the Arabs here, mostly Muslims, but some Christians too, would resist their idea. Because once you mock and discard the Jewish religion, you mock and discard Christianity and Islam, both of them claiming to be the real, true, authentic form of monotheism. The problem with these post-religious Israelis is their post-religious, ultimately Marxist view that religion is the opiate of the masses, a narcotic that prevents people from seeing the truth, and the truth is that all that matters is who owns the means of production, who owns the factories and the farms. Religion is just a way to get the oppressed proletariat to accept their misery as part of life and hope that only in the next life, in heaven, will they be happy. Well, to get back to last week in New York and the speechifying at the UN, last Thursday I had on the webcast some thoughts on the speech given that day by the terrorist Holocaust denier Abbas, but I had not yet heard Bibi's speech. He was good, as usual, but it appeared that the most important fact to come out of last week's speechifying by Bibi and Abbas was that Abbas spoke before a half-empty hall. It's always been like that for Bibi. Most all of the Arab and Muslim states, when he rises to the podium, stand up and walk out, evidence of their inability to respect Israel and its right to its own existence, to its views. But not so for Abbas. 4 years ago, when the General Assembly, in Alice in Wonderland fashion, saluted the creation of a phantom state, a virtual state of Palestine, within the walls of the UN, if not in material reality on the ground outside, the house was packed, standing room only. Today, though, the world has other things on its mind, like the killing fields of Syria and the Muslim terror bombings in many countries. Compared to these world historical shifts, the plight of the Arabs in Judea and Samaria is small. One has to be out of touch with reality not to see that, given the choice today, to an Arab, whether he would rather live in Syria, Iraq, Libya, Yemen, or Judea and Samaria. That's a no-brainer. And I think people at some level understand that. This, of course, did not prevent the delusional Holocaust-denying Muslim moon-worshipper Abbas in his speech from declaring that Israel is guilty of extrajudicial executions. It did not stop him from lying by declaring that Israel is responsible for not implementing the Oslo Accords, and achieving an independent state in 5 years, namely the two-state solution on the basis of the 67 borders, close quote. There are two major lies right there. Oslo said nothing of a two-state solution, believe it or not. Said nothing of the 1967 borders, when in 1967 there were no borders. Anytime you hear an anti-Jew talk of returning to the 1967 borders, in classical fashion, this is characteristic of anti-Jews, we're always lying. In 1967, Israel had no recognized borders by its neighbors or the world, only ceasefire lines. The invention of this term, the 1967 borders, is what permits anti-Jews today to believe that in 1967, Israel crossed a border into a foreign country, the country of Palestine, and so it should retreat from its aggression. This is such a perversion of history, of the truth of what happened in 1967. And for two decades, the Kingdom of Jordan had been in unauthorized occupation of Judea and Samaria, from which terror gangs crossed the ceasefire line to murder Jews in Israel at random. In 1967, the Arabs launched their second major attempt to destroy Israel, and Israel emerged victorious, and the Jordanians were out of Judea and Samaria, that the League of Nations called the historic homeland of the Jewish people. The invention of the 67 borders became one of the building blocks of the wall of mendacious Jew hatred in our time, which unfortunately secular Israelis have never known how to combat, for it would entail asserting their rights as Jews to the heart of the Holy Land, when paradoxically the State of Israel, as they envision it, would not be Jewish at all in the classical religious sense. Yeah, lying is the quintessential hallmark of the anti-Jews, so we should not have been surprised last week when Abbas at the UN also accused Israel of racial discrimination against the Palestinian people. Are we to understand that the Holocaust denier also claims the Palestinians are a race? Race has been understood to refer to physical appearance, and in the century plus of Zionism, not one sentence has been spoken by a Zionist about a Palestinian race that the Jews have an irrational hatred of. He accused Israeli settlers of forming terrorist groups to burn and kill entire families. Groups? There were possibly two incidents of arson committed by two separate Jewish individual psychopaths. No groups were involved. More lies. He called settlement activity a clear, grave breach of international law and true to form. He did not name the law. In a novel entry to the catalog of evil deeds done in the name of Zionism, he said, quote, 100 years have passed since the notorious Balfour Declaration, by which Britain gave without any right, authority, or consent from anyone the land of Balestine to another Bebel. This paved the way for the Nakba of the Palestinian people and their dispossession and displacement from their land, close quote. And never mind, the League of Nations gave Britain the right to create a Palestine that the Arabs had never known. The language of the mandate tells us there was no Palestine when the land was in Muslim hands before the First World War, and it was the League that would create a Palestine to be the historic Jewish homeland, which it was. Of course, Britain had the right, given by the League, contrary to what Abbas says here. In classical Arab intellection, he deletes from history facts he does not like. It's an earlier version of a predecessor of Arafat in 2000 telling Clinton and Ehud Barak the Jews never had any temples on Haram al-Sharif. And never mind, perhaps above all, that the leader of the Arabs, when the League of Nations mandate was ratified in 1922, was Haji Amin al-Husseini, who was adamant that there was no such country as Palestine. What is Abbas talking about? Abbas then went on to demand that Britain apologize for the Balfour Declaration, for the, quote, catastrophes, miseries, and injustice that it created, and to act to rectify this historic catastrophe, close quote. And last but not least, Abbas said, quote, that Israel, quote, has persisted in its contempt for international legitimacy by violating UN General Assembly Resolution 181, the partition plan which called for the establishment of two states on this historic land of Palestine, according to a specific partition plan, close quote. Again, this is one perversion of history after another. Everyone knows that it was the Arabs who rejected Resolution 181 on 29 November 1947, which the Jewish agency accepted. And to speak of the historic land of Palestine, his words, when his leader Haji Amin at the time denied there was an historic land by that name, leaves one speechless. As always, there's absolutely no fidelity to recorded history. History for Arabs is what you want it to be. This is why I say the anti-religious Zionist who established the state and ruled it until 1977 and then came back to power in 1992 came up with the Oslo delirium. They were such lightweight thinkers because they were incapable of stepping into the Arabs' shoes, or in this case, I guess, sandals, and seeing just how primitive they are and were. Abbas is a man who was given a PhD by the anti-Semitic communists in the Soviet Union. But if he had taken what's known in the U.S. as the College Board, specifically the SAT verbal aptitude test, he would not have been accepted into any serious institution of higher learning, let alone be given a PhD. The anti-religious Zionists never knew, never appreciated the level of intellection in Arabian Islam, and how the Arabs have never truly risen to the mentality of nationhood. They remain tribal and subnational. Ergo, the collapse of Libya, Syria, Iraq, all of them a creation of Western nations that never understood the Arabs are incapable of national existence as a rule. Egypt is an exception. This was the unspoken desire of the Oslo delirium. Give Arafat Judea and Samaria, and his nation of Palestinians will be happy to build a nation-state just like the Jews next door. They never understood the smokescreen of Palestinian nationalism that covers up their resistance to Jewish independence, which is Arab resistance and Muslim resistance. Anyway, looking again at some of the still photos of Netanyahu and Obama last week in their last meeting, one can see, as from the beginning, 8 years ago, the hostility of this Louis Farrakhan clone, and that is why today's J-Post ran the headline it did. PM hopes Obama won't push new peace initiative, and why last week 88 senators signed a letter reminding the Muslim Dissembler-in-Chief that in the past the U.S. has defended Israel in the Security Council with the veto, because everybody who cares about Israel is worried what this anti-Semite might do after the November 8 elections. Someone last week put out on the net an edited video of Obama's speech to the UN, in which 11 times he tongue-lashed his own country, the United States, for its sins. He began his presidency, remember, with his famous apology tour, and here he was 8 years later still bashing the United States, saying nothing of the plague of terrorist horrors his fellow Muslims have been perpetrating, if not every day, then every week. It was just revealed today that that massacre on Friday night in Burlington, Washington State, was perpetrated by another Muslim, a Turkish immigrant. How long will it take before Americans wake up and realize that the only rational response to this terror, in light of what is happening in Europe, is to shut the door to Muslim immigration and outlaw Islam? You're listening to www.deprogramprogram.com, broadcasting from the hills of Judea. I'm Shai Ben-Tekoa. I ended the last segment with the thought that the only rational response to this terror, in light of what is happening in Europe, is to shut the door to Muslim immigration and outlaw Islam. And what I had in mind was a most disturbing post on the Gatestone website, the best source of reporting from Europe and Turkey, by Giulio Meotti and Søren Kern, and yesterday's piece from France by Guy de Milliers, a professor at the University of Paris. It's one of the more powerful pieces. For years now, we have watched the results of massive in-migration into Sweden and Germany last New Year's Eve, and its growth in other countries, but this report from France somehow made it seem like past reports had, at least for yours truly, been not taken seriously enough. I think I believed at some point that the Europeans were going to stand up straight and resist, and now I'm not so sure. And now it really seems to be happening, this invasion of Europe by Muslims, and not seen since the 17th century. Only now, they're disguised as refugees in distress. Guy Milliers led off saying that for 30 years, France has seen an accelerating process of Islamization, and most chilling was this sentence, quote, "Daily life in France is different now. Many women do not go out at night. Jews go out alone. Jews know they are being watched." He cited the first headscarf controversy in 1989, which began in a suburb of Paris when three girl students decided to attend high school wearing their Islamic scarves. When the principal refused entry to them dressed like that, their parents and newly created Muslim associations filed a complaint, and in the end, the parents and the Muslim associations won. Following their victory, headscarves began to appear in high schools as never before, and seen on the streets as never before, soon to be replaced, he says, by long black veils. In 2003, the French, in order to resist the headscarf and black veils, outlawed all religious symbols in schools, which included ecumenically wearing crosses and kippot, skull caps. Muslim associations called for an end to discrimination and demanded halal food in school cafeterias, and before long, Muslim students were eating at their own segregated tables. Muslim parents protested against the content of history books when it came to Islam. Unveiled women in Muslim neighborhoods began to be assaulted and raped, and then black veils morphed into niqabs and burqas. The teaching of the Holocaust became taboo because Muslims deny it ever happened. It's all Zionist propaganda. Nowadays, halal food is standard in all school cafeterias, and history books praise Islamic civilization. Oh, how are they teaching the story of Charles Martel and what happened at Poitiers when he stopped the advance of Islam? Above all, almost no French politician, he wrote, not even the most courageous ones, dares to say that Islam creates problems. Almost all books on Islam on sale in French bookstores are written by Islamists and others praising Islam. And French journalists write under threat of trial or assault and almost never use the phrase Islamic terrorism. Now, where does that come from? Sounds kind of familiar. Who else has put a ban on using the term Islamic terrorism? None other than the jihadi in the Oval Office. And unless Americans wake up and shake off what Obama has done and is doing to the country and facilitating the invasion of Muslims, the fate of France will be the fate of the U.S. and Canada and any other liberal democracy foolish enough not to perceive the threat and take defensive measures. Anyway, there's this report by Guy Milliers, available at Stone, has gone a long way to quash my own, I guess, measure of denial of the threat that I was not even aware of. It's really happening. When Obama promised fundamental change in America, this is what he had in mind, for he himself is a jihadi master of taqiyya, arguably the greatest practitioner in history. Okay, that's it for this evening, and looking forward to tomorrow night's first debate between Trump and Hillary. Ted Cruz came out today for Trump. Good for him. Even though Trump, the vulgarian, insulted his wife, he understands, and he's a real patriot in saying we cannot have Hillary. I'm most worried that with the poll showing still 50-50 between the two, if it remains true on Election Day, she's going to win because her people are going to cheat like crazy. I'm afraid they cheated in 2012 as well. Anyway, that's it for this first night of the week, and God willing, we'll be back on Tuesday. Until then, Laila Tov, Me'eretz Yisrael.